Blog Talk Radio.
Chief Langley, and the national spokesperson for the House of Ancestry. This evening, it is October 13th, 2016. It's Thursday night. It is ladies' night for DNA test results discussion. We have a few of our team members on board tonight. They haven't arrived yet, so I guess I will go into a few basic how-tos when it comes to researching your ancestry. The so-called African American community has the most difficult time of researching ancestry and ethnicity due to the relationships of slavery. Within slavery, there were a lot of slave breedings, and not only just slave breedings of Africans and Asians, and Africans and Native Americans, and Africans and Scottish and Irish. These things are very important and should always be considered. Many a times when one is looking at mulatto ancestors, the key is to look at the law of that particular colony or state. The mulatto in South Carolina, according to the law, is not the same mulatto that's in Virginia. In South Carolina, the mulatto issue is a white woman and a Negro man. In Virginia, it is an English man and an African or Negro woman. Those things change. So that's very important to realize just that particular aspect of what's going on when researching your ancestry. Many times, many blacks will feel if I have any white ancestry, it came through a white male. That should be a red flag because that is not 100% true. It came from the white woman, especially if you're in the South. This is to be very, very particular with that. And also coming from the West Indies, Barbados, you will find this information written in the British documents and in the archives over some 300,000 white women were sent down to the Barbados. And for over nearly 220 years, they bred these poor Irish and Scottish women with African men. The American colonialism and American history books don't want to talk about this, but this is a scientific fact, and it did happen. So if you got any ancestry coming out of Barbados or trace of the Barbados, you need to be looking at a white woman, not a white male from that perspective. A lot of those people that came in at the time, they were already mixed race people settling the South Carolinas. Quadroom, octoroom, quidroom, and these things are to be very important. One of our members just showed up, so I will let her on the call. Good evening.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. How is the weather where you are?
It was actually nice today, so it wasn't too bad. I'm in Maryland, so
okay.
It's starting to get cold outside.
All right. Cool. So now you're with the House of Ancestry. I want you to share a little bit about your DNA journey and a little bit of the history of research and briefly touch on it a little bit.
Well, a few years ago, I decided to actually, I wanted to, you know, retrace my roots and, you know, find out, you know, exactly where my family comes from. Because I
what
asked my mom, like,
that?
I'm sorry?
What inspired you to start the initiative to really looking into your roots?
Well, what inspired me was, actually, I don't know, one day I was just sitting thinking. I was like, you know, I really don't know too much about, you know, my family history, where I come from. And I asked my mom, you know, Mom, you know, what are my people? And, you know, she said we were Negroes. And I'm like, you know, that's that's not really an ethnicity. You know, that was a slave name. So, I mean, yeah. So I decided I wanted to find out about my people, who I am. So I got a DNA test. That's what I did, just to be sure. Because my grandmother had said, you know, we were, you know, Indians, but I'm African, 89% African. It is that. That's what inspired me to.
There were some African Indians. A lot of East Indians came into Madagascar and Mauritania and East Africa and
were in there for a very long time. So mating with those particular Africans
or just settling there in general, the DNA admixture would be different from those of West Africa and would probably show up in many markers today as Asian. So that's something that should be looked at. But for the most part, the perception that America gave, only Africans came over here with big lips, wide nose, nappy hair. They said nothing about any of those hundreds of tribes of Africans that had straight hair. And there's tons of them. Hundreds of them. And many of them get mistaken to be today because of the Blackfoot. They were Indians, but in all reality, could have been, but they're East Indians or East African, sometimes Northern African. All were shipped here. Moroccans, the Berbers, Madagascar, Mauritania, Ethiopian, Eritrea, many of them are slick-haired Africans. The Sudanese, many of them are slick-haired Africans. With features that one would be compared to, they say, European, but I have to tell everybody, hey, I'm sorry, the Africans predate the Europeans. So it's not that the Africans and Native Americans have European features. Europeans have their features, I would say. So I understand what you're saying when it comes to that. Rudy?
Hello?
Go ahead. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
For my DNA test, I think my highest was in Nigeria, like 28%. And okay. I was, my biggest thing with this is that there's so many different, like, ethnic groups in, like, Nigeria.
There were 5,000.
Yeah, it's a lot. But it's very interesting because I'm trying to break down and, you know, learn. Not only am I trying to, retrace my roots, but it's nice to, you know, also learn about some of the different African cultures. And as I do my research, I plan on looking into that aspect as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, the same thing happened with America. When the colonials came in and broke it up, North America, Central America, South America, there are over 5,000 ethnic groups here in America. And none of those ethnic groups all look the same. Different.
Yeah.
Some darker. Some hair a little wavier, some hair a little slicker, some tall, some short. You're talking about a continent. But the perception that they give today is not the reality of the perception from the earlier colonial times. So what I tell
I
a lot of people...
Where some people get,
go ahead.
I think that's where some people probably get confused as well.
Well, the biggest mistake they make on Facebook, you got a lot of these people posting all these pictures, and the pictures that they're posting are people that are in South America or they're out west. They're not the people of the Southeast United States. So I would say, okay, if these people are the descendants of the Native Americans and they look so much like these people, how come your hair texture is different? If that was the case, any of them claiming to be Native American today who failed to take a DNA test, you would not have nappy hair. Your hair texture would be the same. Many of those pictures that they posted of many of those people are from the Philippines. Unless those Filipinos came in here in slavery, which a lot of them did. I say, okay, but you can't make the case. Just look like my grandmama and your hair is nappy and their hair is straight. Big mistake. So a lot of people need to be very careful with these certain Facebook groups, these blogs,
I agree,
and these pages, because these people are not authentic in what they are trying to present. They are not scholars. Cut and paste and go to different groups and cut information and then change the information and try to get it to fit. So that's nothing but rhetoric. So you got to be very careful with that. There's a lot of that that's going on, especially in the African American, a African community. 90% of them take a DNA test African. But they're forgetting, what about the straight hair? We're African. What about the wavy hair? African. Rather, they come to the reality of saying, you know what? One of my ancestors may have made it with a Native American due to slavery. So we're part of his ancestry. That will make more sense than to talk about I'm 1,000%. I'm 100 Aborigines. Many of them can't even spell Aborigines.
I think it might come from, you know, some sort of self-hate. You know what I mean? I guess it's hard to, you know, accept that your ancestors were slaves brought from another continent. I think that's where the biggest problem lies at. And I guess they feel like, you know, the history isn't rich over there, but, you know, when you research and you take the time out to really learn, it's beautiful.
Exactly. And many a time, from my experience, what I'm seeing, when African Americans encounter Africans, they may not be of that particular African ethnic group. So therefore, you are foreign to them. You go to another part and find someone is of the ethnic tribe you come from, they embrace you with open arms. So to get the perception Africans want nothing to do with African Americans is all, for me, is a hoax. That's a whole continent with different ethnic groups of people must find who identifies with you. Now, we had one of our House of Ancestry members, Fode Kunda, went over there, received his ancestral name, connected with people through DNA testing because it has gotten better, that he actually descends from those people. And when he went into those villages, he found people that looked just like him. So these things are very important, and that's the importance of DNA. I used to be against it, but changes have been made and have gotten better. And as technology advances, we should advance along with it. That's just my take on it.
Yeah.
So have your family embraced your finding, your mom?
So far they have. I'm trying to encourage my mom to actually get a DNA test. It's a work in progress. Like, she's older, so she doesn't really even, you know, she really doesn't want to do it. So I'm trying to convince her.
Mm.
But I think it'd be also, it'd be a wonderful thing if she would do it. But everybody else seems like my sister, my brothers, they're fine with it.
Okay. I will admit there is a culture difference. And that is to be expected. Three, 400 years cut off from a culture.
Yeah.
And to have the opportunity to embrace that culture and go back and see what the original diet was and how they treat certain issues, mental issues, sicknesses, physical disabilities, you can really learn a lot. I used to think one time everybody was the same. But when I looked at it from a medical perspective and they're testing different bloods, people are different. Don't want to sound racist or prejudiced, but when you test people from African blood and test people from European blood and Asian blood, these people are not all the same. So therefore, the diets is different. So therefore, you have to treat them with different medications. But here in American society, we eat food of everybody. Nobody else does that. Chinese eat the Chinese food. Mexican eat the Mexican food. Italian eat the Italian food. What do we eat? The food of everybody. No wonder everyone is so sick. Anything about we have soul food, but that ain't the healthiest thing to eat. It's tradition. With all that macaroni and cheese and collard greens on, and fried chicken, we have more high blood pressure, more high cholesterol. That is what soul food has done. Pork. Now I've had some relatives, I'm going to eat pork to the. And you know what? They kick right on out.
So, well, I kind of like the collard greens.
Depends on how they prepared.
True.
You,
it can
like
be
the
good
hog,
for you, but...
you like the hog chitlin' stew, dear?
No. I have tried them, but no.
That's a nasty hog guts. Ugh.
Mm. That's definitely old school.
Yeah, my mother asked me, can I cook some chitlins in here? I don't even want to smell that crap in here.
Mm-hmm. Well,
you know,
that's what they had to do back then. So.
That's what they had to do. That should
yeah.
be a sign that the slave master didn't give a damn about his slave, and his slave made him wealthy, and he ain't had the decency to feed the slave well, you gave them the guts of the hog to eat. That's a low blow. You can't get no lower than that. And the white folks listening, I hope they are. That is low down and dirty. Your ancestors gave their own slave that farmed the land, cooked the food for them, the hog guts. And they wouldn't even eat the hog guts back then. Oh, they eat it now. That's a little. That's a whole nother interview to do. I don't eat it, period. So I feel you on that.
So I guess that's why it's important to get back to our roots so we can get back on our proper diet.
Exactly. You know, some people who are biracial or triracial, then they could probably eat some of that other stuff because it's now a part of their genetics. But if you're not, nah. Mm-mm. Nope. Can't do it. Cannot do it there. So, as a woman, what are some of your types of diet that you yourself engage in to be healthy and remain fit and trim and good sound minded? What do you recommend women to do?
Well, as a woman, it is water is very important. We all know this. And also fruits and vegetables. Just
what kind?
Watermelon, apples, grapes, oranges, bananas. Bananas specifically, those are good for you. Or plantains, those are good for you too.
So. And how much water to drink daily you recommend?
About, on average, it was about 32 ounces a day.
Okay. That's your average?
It could be a little more, but I drink it throughout the day. I'm not really like a soda person. I try to stay away from those. If it is, it's ginger ale. That's the only type of soda I really try to drink. Excuse me, I have a cold. But
okay. What diet meat?
Turkey, chicken, sometimes chicken.
How do you prepare?
Baked. Or grilled. Grilled is fine as well. Sometimes I do fry occasionally, but I try to keep it to a minimum. That's what I usually do. And exercise. Exercise is good, at least 2 to 3 times a week. It doesn't have to be nothing strenuous or anything like that. But I will say, you know, how you can start out slow, but expect to get, you know, the results for when you do exercise at a slow pace.
Okay. So you make sure that your family is healthy as well? Do you push that issue?
I try. I do enforce it. It's kind of hard because my boys, they're very picky. So I try to involve them in cooking meals. And I do often end up fixing, you know, more than what one thing than what I planned for dinner that night. But for the most part, it's starting to work out with them, helping prepare meals. They're starting to open up to trying new things.
Okay. So I take it you enjoy cooking.
Yes.
That's something a lot of women don't like to do today.
I guess, well, you know, things have changed. You know, more women are working besides being in the home. I'm not saying they probably don't mind cooking, but, you know, it's easier probably to fix something that's 20 minutes or less.
My take on that, unless I'm out a lot, I don't trust a lot of restaurant cooking. And it's a spiritual thing to be aware of. Somebody might have a bad day cooking. Or there's a whole lot of bad attitude. You know, all that energy is over the food.
That's
and people
great.
Used to think it don't make a difference, but I totally disagree. When my grandmother cooked, she was always singing or humming or happy or joyful in the kitchen. And that food, if you were sick, made you well. I could remember a man that lived 2 doors down, and he would say, if I could just get a little bit of Miss Ruby's green, oh, I feel better. And my grandmama that raised me from 3 days old, mama would fix a plate, and I'd take it down there to him. And he didn't have strength to do nothing else, but he had enough strength to get to the door and get that plate. And he felt better because food is made with love, a woman's energy, compassion, peace. is into that. And that's why preparing a meal, I think, is so important. But when you go out to fast food restaurants, that burger may not taste too good because somebody in there really don't want to work there. Having a bad day, even in the restaurants. Well, I spent 5 years in the Navy over in Japan, and I learned with Asian people, when they get angry, they always smile. I never got angry with any Asian in a restaurant. Matter of fact, I don't get angry with anyone in a restaurant because you don't have the upper hand. You can act like Miss Thing need to serve me and I'm paying for it. Okay, what is he going to the back and spit in your food? Or pee in it? Or pass gas over it? Then bring it back to you. Ooh, this tastes so good. I guess it does. You have to be very courteous with a waiter or waitress. Very respectful at all times because they hold the destiny of your hunger in their hands. And a lot of folks don't think like that, but I'm always conscious of that. Mm-mm. That's just my take on it.
So what's your take on, like, a family restaurant that's run by, like, a family business? Do you feel the same way?
I feel the same way because you deal
with
people.
Healthy, with or what if it was healthy food?
Same thing. They need to have a healthy attitude.
Mm-hmm.
I give you an example. If you saw someone outside fighting, or you saw someone outside arguing, the husband, kids, or whatever, then she comes in, puts on her apron. You want that person to serve you?
No.
Okay. I have eaten at soul food restaurants. And the food has been tasteful. But I don't make it a habit to eat out all the time for the same reason I just gave you. I'm too afraid. Mm-mm. I don't know what's going in my stomach. No. The more you become health conscious, you tend to stay away from those things. And like growing your own food, cooking your own food. Next question.
Yes, excuse me. I'm sorry, I was wondering, how do you feel about, like, healthy restaurants? Like, you know, that serve, like, vegan food.
It's okay. That's fine. But then again, I usually research the vegan restaurant more so than I do the other restaurants because they're promoting healthy. So I want to know just how healthy this food is. Where does it come from? I read the menu. See how organic it is. What type of pesticide was on these cabbages or greens or vegetables? That is very important when it comes to organic food. How natural really is it being grown? So, but we live in a world so we can only be cautious to a certain point. That's just my take. Go ahead. Hello?
Hello? Oh, I'm sorry. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hello?
I'm here.
I was just going to say, I do think it is important that, you know, families, you know, do grow their food. And that's one thing I wanted to start with my kids next year is I wanted to start a garden in my backyard to teach self-preservation and learn how to, you know, grow their own food, cook their own food, like you said. And I think it's a way for families, like, to come together. as
that
well.
That is family time. I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Get out in the garden with your man. Get out in the garden with your lady. Get on your knees. Get your hands dirty. Plant. Harvest. Pick. Those are intimate times. You'd be amazed what those type of moments do to enhance relationship. Because you're doing things together. You know, couples who don't have gardens or never experienced going out to the farm, picking fruit together, they miss those precious moments that are priceless.
Mm-hmm.
And they stimulate relationships. Some people never get to experience that. I think they should, but they don't.
I guess it comes from that, I think it comes from where some of the younger generation wasn't taught this. Like my grandfather was a farmer. Actually, I have two actually great-grandfathers that were also farmers. And after they died, it just, nobody else did it. Like my grandfather, he even had he had set up a produce stand before he died. He had planted the seeds and he did all that by himself. And he had his little stand and everything. And after he died, nobody continued or carried it on or anything. They just let it, go.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel that the younger generation, they just got away from some of the ways that our ancestors had as far as tilling the ground and growing their food.
Actually, that gives you a sense of independence to a point, and you will be amazed what that does to your thought process. Gives you just a little more freedom. Because we're living in a world that is beginning to make people more robotic of having to depend on the technologies that takes your thought processes away. So you become more and more of a consumer and you're producing nothing. Therefore, you become totally dependent. I give you an example. I'm willing to bet you half of the United States population, I'll go further than that. I would say 90% of the U.S. population is now dependent upon a cell phone. They can't function without it. They will go through withdrawal. People can no longer today, they're so dependent upon the internet. They don't check an email during the day or go on Facebook. They will go through withdrawal because now their lives have become solely dependent upon it, that it gives the impression that it's now a necessity. Can't live without it.
Yes, I will agree with that.
I just turned 50 in July, and I remember when there were no cell phones. I remember when there were no internet. I remember if you traveled from North Carolina to Florida or from South Carolina to New York, you didn't make no phone call. From the time you left your house, or you stopped at a gas station or a hotel. Other than that, your family didn't hear from you until you drove up to the door. So they looked at the clock and measured the time. They should be getting in here anytime now. It's 13 hours. They left last night. They should be here by noon. Totally dependent. You find that again with children. You take the most smartest student, give them a calculator, I guarantee you they can no longer do basic mathematics with their hands. Can't function without the calculator. So now they can't pass standard tests. Now without the calculator. So what does that do? You just handicap the ability to think. So they're no longer using the thought process and the brain muscle. Got the calculator.
The calculator, the iPod, everything.
There you go.
Tablet.
You just said it. We have created a monster. It's a Frankenstein. But you better be able to control that monster. If not, it will consume you in the end.
Yeah.
And that's the disadvantage and the advantages of technology. So one must got to figure how am I going to balance.
I think as a mother, to balance that out, I think it's important for when I have a talk with the kids, explain to them, let them know that that a limited amount of technology is all that they really need. It's important to still be able to learn how to do basic things for yourself. Hello?
I will agree.
Hello?
I'm here. Go ahead.
Hello? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I was fading it out.
I will agree.
What do you think is the best way to keep kids from, as well as adults too, because it's not just the young kids anymore either. I think the adults are starting to get used to the technology as they're learning how to use the iPads and the tablets.
What's your question, sweetie?
I'm sorry, what do you think as families, what do you think we should do to keep our younger generation from becoming lazy and dependent on technology?
Govern those devices. Make them turn
like
them
how
off.
Often you think?
Unless if your kids ride the bus to school, they don't need to carry the cell phone to school. If your kid has to walk or catch the subway, then he needs the cell phone. They need to be regulated. Same thing with iPods, iPads. Regulate them. How many kids actually read books now from a paperback book? How many people? Yeah, you got the iPad over here or the note, but it's nothing like picking up that book and holding it in your hand. Sit at a table or sitting in a chair or leaning up against a tree or sitting on the floor. Reading. Totally different experience. So we must regulate those things. I feel, but parents don't regulate. I don't want to sound like a dictator, but if I was your husband, I collect all cell phones at 4 o'clock.
Why at 4 o'clock?
And nobody would get them until tomorrow morning unless there was a need. been in school with your kids all day. Friend, what's going on with so much texting after school? That should be family time. This is how indirect relationships have more information on what's going on with your children than you do. Kids shouldn't be able to confide more in their friends than they do their parents, or even their own sisters and brothers. But when you haven't developed a situation or circumstance for after school, then it's family time. It's all about us. Those things happen. Or we only going to have a meal. Now it's bedtime. So when do you spend time with your children? On the weekend? No. My grandmother didn't believe in that. I got out of school. What little chores I had to do. Homework time, mom was with me. After homework time, what do y'all want to watch on TV? We watch TV together. Bedtime. When the lights was out, the lights was out for everybody. 9 o'clock, we all in the bed. I followed her guide. That was her rule. Lights out, bedtime in this house. I'm asleep, everybody else sleep. That's the shift she ran. And I'm not sad to say, many of that has been instilled in me today and how I would operate my shift. Now, when they're grown, you have given them the tools to enter the world. Now, they take what you have given them, and place their own spin on life. See how successful they are. And how do you measure success? My grandmother always said, anything you do to achieve good, you have been successful. So don't measure your capacity compared to someone else. It is based upon you and your happiness. These are the things we have to get back to. That is what's in me. New kids will be telling me, Mom, Daddy got us in jail. Okay. That was bonding.
Well, your
time.
Family structure is.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say yours was similar to my mom's. Like she kind of ran a ship like your grandmother's, but. I say with me, I'm a little more lenient with my kids in certain aspects of, allow them to go off and they go outside, they have their fun time. they can't, usually if they watch TV, it's like one show around 7 o'clock, they get their baths, get their clothes out, they get ready to go to bed. Or like my youngest son, he likes to read books, and yes, he still reads paperbacks, him and my oldest daughter do. But they do have different bedtimes. My youngest goes to bed at a different time as my oldest son. Because I feel like it should be that, you know, when it's older, they shouldn't have to, you know, be on the same level, allow his brother to be the older brother.
Okay. Nothing wrong with that. If it works. And it works.
It does. I mean, they don't really like too much. They can't, you know, watch TV like they want to. But I try to explain to them. They don't need it.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of kids watch too much TV nowadays as it is. Sometimes you gotta turn it off.
Well, I think
we have family game nights on Fridays.
Okay. What type of games you play with your kids?
Oh, board games, sorry, Trouble.
Okay.
They like charades.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, darling, we're almost at the 1 hour mark. Go ahead.
I was going to tell you to go ahead and say what you were going to say.
I think family time with games is good. That should be practiced more often. And I think as the Black family structure needs to reinvent itself and to go back into those things that are priceless. And spending intimate time with family, can't pay for that. Gives you peace of mind, relaxation of the soul, then a complete understanding of the fundamental basis of your family structure. That's what I believe. And on that note, dear, if you don't have anything else, that's been our show for this evening.
Okay.
All right. Have a good one.
And thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.